reading Ephesians chapter 2, verses 4 through 11. I made great work. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I also had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and all the treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and delights of the flesh, many concubines. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep them from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure from all my toil, and this was my reward from all my toil. Then I considered that all my hands had done and the toil I had spent in doing it, and again, all was vanity and a chasing after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
That was, we believe, written by Solomon, who was indeed had everything. Hear now this word from the Gospel of Luke in the 12th chapter. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will barn and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and goods, and I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be?" So it is to those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God. This is the word of the Lord. Now, if you think back to what I just read, do you remember who asked Jesus the question that started him telling the story about the farmer? Well, it was a man who wanted Jesus to act as an arbiter between him and his brother, and it had something to do with an inheritance and perhaps not sharing things fairly. Ever hear of siblings fighting over an inheritance? Maybe it's happened in your family. It can get quite ugly. In my own family, my grandfather and his eldest brother did not speak for decades over something in an inheritance. When they were in their 70s, and they were the only ones left in their family, the only ones who remembered the good old days and each other as children, they decided that a shared history and affection was worth more than any inheritance, and they made things up. But they wasted decades being mad at each other. Can you really put a price on shared memories and kinship? Well, the man at the beginning of this text thought so, and he wanted Jesus to help him collect. Maybe he was truly in the right and his brother was being unjust. But Jesus refuses to act as an arbitrator between the brothers and instead, like a good rabbi, tells them a story. In the story, Jesus describes a fortunate farmer. And note that there were no cats, little bunnies, or workers that were harmed in the amassing of his wealth. There is not a whisper that he treated anyone badly or cheated or was a sharp dealer. He was lucky, meaning that preparation met opportunity and he prospered. Have you ever had that happen to you? You really studied for an exam and you got an A. You worked hard in your career and you got a promotion. You spent years and all your resources raising children and grandchildren, and they became good citizens. Please note that Jesus does not criticize the farmer for doing well. The Lord would like all of us to do well and prosper. Jesus is not critiquing money. Meanwhile, back to the farmer who has a problem. He did so well, we heard that his barn could not hold everything from his new prosperity. And so the conversation he had with himself went like this. Congratulated himself, he questioned himself, and he answered himself. And his answer to himself was to build bigger barns to handle all the new goods he had. And then Jesus tells us that the farmer's life was demanded of him by God. Further, God calls the farmer a fool, not a pig or a money grubber, but a fool. And God asks the farmer, all these things which you have prepared, whose will they be? Jesus closes the story with the summary, so it is with those who store up treasure for themselves but are not rich toward God. Is it me, or does the story seem to end rather abruptly? You know, the farmer is doing exceedingly well. Yay for him. And the story should end with him riding off into the sunset. Instead, it ends with death and judgment. Ouch. The key to understanding Jesus' critique is the phrase, not rich towards God, and the fact that the farmer is talking to his soul, not his pocketbook. Since God does not need our paltry riches, in fact, it's God who gives us the riches we have and mercy and grace, and asks us, O mortal, what is required of you? To which the answer is to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. But what does the farmer do? He talks to himself, he congratulates himself, and he keeps everything to himself. The emphasis is on self. How might the fortunate farmer have acted if he were living for God and not himself? How might he have acted in kindness toward others who were hungry? The biblical scholar William Barclay once wrote, "If a person looks on his or her possessions as a means to comfort, that is a chain that must be broken. If a person looks on his or her possessions as a means of helping others, then that is his or her crown." I'd like to tell you a story about the Bach family, B-O-K, Bach, whose most famous son was Edward Bach, who was the editor-in-chief of the Ladies' Home Journal. If you remember that magazine, you know, but this was back at the turn of the last century. Everybody got the Ladies' Home Journal. And Edward's grandfather was commissioned by the King of Denmark way back in the 1800s to lead a band of soldiers against pirates who were wrecking havoc on shipping and trade along a certain coastal area. Now, if you're back in Denmark, you know, trade is your lifeblood. The elder Bach, Edward's grandfather, set up his headquarters on a lonely, rocky island just off the coast. And after a few years, he was able to clear off the pirates from that area. Upon returning to the mainland, Bach reported to the king. The king was very pleased with what had happened, and he offered Bach anything that he wanted. And Bach said, "What I really want is that little island where I was living and working for a couple years. And people told them, well, the island is barren. It's windswept. I mean, you are really crazy. Think of something else. But Box replies, I want to plant trees. I want to make the island beautiful. Everyone thought he was crazy, but he moved out there. It was this island that was constantly swept by wind. They said, a tree will never take root. It'll never work. But Bach insisted, and the king granted him the wish, and off he went to live on the island. He built a home and was finally able to bring his wife over. And for years, they worked industriously, persistently planting trees and shrub and flowers and grass. And gradually, the vegetation took hold, and the island began to flourish. And then one day, they woke up, and they heard something. Bird song. There had never been birds on the island before. Eventually, the island became a showplace, and it's now visited by thousands of tourists each year. When he died, Edward Bach's grandfather requested that the following words be inscribed on his tomb. Make you the world a bit more beautiful and better because you have been on it. But the story doesn't end there. Edward Bach, the grandson, who had become an American citizen, believed that anyone who was able to do so should retire at age 50, might be in our day, maybe age 60, and spend the rest of his or her life trying to make the world a better or more beautiful place to live. And he was as good as his word. At age 50, he retired as the editor of the Ladies' Home Journal and became a noted philanthropist. One day, while he was traveling around Central Florida, he came upon Iron Mountain. To say that this is a mountain in Central Florida is sort of, I think we're standing on a mountain here. The elevation was 324 whoopee feet above sea level, the highest point in Florida. When I lived on something called the Bee Ridge, 26 feet above sea level. That was the highest place in the whole county. It was in a swampy area. But immediately the thought hit him. Why not repeat in America what his grandfather had done in the old country? And so he bought a lot of acreage and set to work. He did this with the help of famed landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted Jr. And wow, he was more than successful. The place was called the Mountain Lake Sanctuary, and it was in Lake Wales, Florida. In fact, it still is in Lake Wales, Florida. It's now called Bach Garden, and it is a major tourist attraction. They have a carillon on top of the tower that goes off, and it brings a lot of prosperity to a rural area. It's also a center for research for plant and animal conservation, blah, blah, blah. Especially if there are rare tropical plants and animals, which are disappearing faster than we can catalog them. Hundreds of student interns and scientists live and study and work in Bach Tower. And they're there learning how to conserve our plant and animal resources and preserve our planet. You know, the Christian scholar and teacher C.H. Spurgeon, while talking to a group about what makes a good life, said this. I often use this in funerals. A good character is the best gravestone. Those who loved you and were helped by you will remember you. So carve your name on hearts and not on marble. You know, there are so many ways that you and I can make a difference in the world, a better place for us having lived in it. You can make it better for children with the art and music camp and other things by maybe mentoring kids or having a hard time in school. You can make things better by working with the food pantry or bringing food in for it. You can make things better by visiting those who are lonely or shut in. You can be a friend to someone who is a new neighbor or grieving or is raising small children. You can leave a monument in a cemetery, or you can leave a monument that makes the world a better place. You can live for God, or you can live for yourself. Edward Bach is buried in his garden, and upon his tomb are these words. make you, the world, a bit more beautiful and better place because you have been in it. Something I think to which Jesus would heartily agree.